I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, and liberty. Now, right now, it's been a couple weeks since we've met, but had two tragedies since then, the 19 firefighters in Arizona and casualties, I believe it was two, that occurred in the flight, Asiana flight, this past weekend. So if we could take a moment of silence, please.
Mr. Chairman, can we add one more on there? Sam Kostich, former retired Amador County employee of the assessor's office, longtime employee, passed.
Thank you for adding that. So if we could take a moment of silence for all of those people, please.
If I could just say, you know, a couple words about Sammy. He come back to the county. He loved his church, and he served his country during Korea. And I worked with him for quite a few years. I know he was an employee for about 18 years of the county, so he was a good guy. He'll be missed.
Thank you. The board has met in closed session. And addressed item one, item two, item three, A and B, item four, and given direction to staff or heard a report and or gave direction to staff on those items. That on the agenda and let's just go ahead and approve the agenda. Our motion.
Make a motion to approve the agenda as submitted.
Moved and second to approve the agenda. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Public matters not in the agenda. Discussion items only. No action to be taken. Any person may address the board at this time upon any subject within the jurisdiction of the Amador County Board of Supervisors. However, any matter that requires action may be referred to staff and a committee for a report and possible action at a subsequent board meeting. And there's a three-minute time limit. Is there any public comment at this time? Yes, sir. You could state your name for the record, please.
Yes. Richard Murdoch, Executive Director with Mountain Valley EMS Agency.
Morning.
Chairman Forster and members of the board. And Pat Murphy is our Amador County liaison. Wanted to stop by this morning and just put our name and our face of the agency and say hello, good morning, and advise you that we are currently negotiating with American Legion Ambulance because their contract expires at the end of this year, so you'll probably see and hear more from during our times with negotiations with American Legion and wanted to say hi. Drop off our business cards if you have any questions, any concerns, you can contact us.
A little bit of what you guys do is you make sure that ambulances make their response times, and if they don't, then there's a fine associated with that, and this goes along as well with the air ambulances, if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's correct. One of the responsibilities that the agency has is to make sure that compliance with the contract is met by the ambulance companies that we are contracted with, as well as the air ambulance companies. In addition, the clinical quality improvement, we have a medical director, Dr. Kevin Mackey, and we have two full-time nurses on board that operate as our quality improvement coordinators and make sure that the clinical piece of the EMS is also intact. So the biggest piece is the response time standards as well as the clinical piece for
And then you also help in training EMTs and all of that stuff.
Absolutely. In fact,
Pat might want to address
that. Pat is very active with Amador County in training first responders and EMTs.
Yeah, I just go ahead and I
go to their trainings whenever they ask me to. Main thing I do is MCI training, but I do EMT certifications and recertification classes, CE classes.
We also work closely with Amador County Public Health. We have a piece of the Hospital Preparedness Program grant. We have deliverables under the LIMSA, which is the Local Emergency Medical Services Agency coordinator piece of the HPP grant. And the function of that grant is for emergency preparedness. So we work with Amador County Public Health to make sure that the county is meeting the standards that are set forth by California Department of Public Health for emergency preparedness.
Mr. Murdoch, in your discussions with both ground ambulance and air ambulance, can you include some kind of discussion amongst the three air ambulance providers to attempt to work out a reciprocal agreement? Right now, our situation is with CalSTAR having left Amador County that to have true coverage from a medical emergency standpoint, our citizens have to buy three air ambulance cards, one from PHI, Reach, and CalSTAR. And it seemed like there should be a way for those entities through their contracting with Mountain Valley EMS to work out some sort of reciprocal agreement, whether it's a more expensive air ambulance card than the $45, maybe it's $100, but if the citizen could know that they were covered for an emergency air ambulance ride, regardless of which carriers they bought, I think it'd be a great benefit to the citizens of Amador County.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely. Beginning of next year is the time that we will be negotiating with PHI, Mercy Ambulance, which is an air ambulance out of Modesto and Merced, and CalSTAR. And so we will be...
Not Reach?
No, we do not have any agreements with Reach.
Mr. Murdoch, in regards to that question that Supervisor Plaz asked, knowing firsthand, I believe some of them do give a discount if you have one and there is an accident and something happens and one picks up from another one, and I believe they do give some kind of a discount in regards to a fee. I know it happened in my case, so.
Yeah, and from my understanding,
I don't know.
We don't regulate the rates for air ambulances. We are just starting to regulate the rates in Stanislaus County for the ground ambulances, and so that's a discussion that we will have later on today with American Legion Ambulance. But as far as the air ambulance, each air ambulance company has different rates and different ways they offset their cost, and I'm really not too sure as far as how they operate with regards to those rates. So that is something that we have been in discussion with Mercy Air Ambulance just for the transparency purposes so that we can be a little more involved and actually have some accountability towards those air ambulance companies.
Well, either way, it's great having coverage here when you need it.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, gentlemen. Good to see you.
Any other public matters?
Mr. Chairman,
hold on,
I had
hold on.
Terry Sanders.
Yep.
Okay.
I wasn't informed of that, so I have to, okay. Had to step in.
I had our Veteran Service Officer, Mr. Terry Sanders, here to discuss Senate Bill number 296 in regards to the intervention funds.
Good morning.
Morning,
Sanders, Amador County Veteran Service Officer. As you know, I've come in front of the board before and asked for support of SB 296, which the board graciously gave. Just so you know, that board, that was shot down. It was not approved. We asked for an additional $5 million. However, what they did approve was a $3 million increase to the California Subvention Fund fundings that they're going to send out to the counties immediately is what they're saying. Now, how are they going to send out this money? They haven't decided exactly yet. What I'd like to do is read an email that I received from Pete Conate, who is our legislator advocate in Sacramento. This is my view of where we are. This is primarily for new CVSOs and those who have not been following this issue like the executive committee. History, the CAVSO has always advocated for increased state funding to increase their ability to serve more veterans. It has been a 15-year battle to get this increased funding. CACVSO always understood that the increased funding was to hire more personnel and do more outreach. CACVSO always understood that your increased funding request was not based upon being able to reduce the county's cost. That proposition would have been laughed out of the Capitol and also would have jeopardized the existing $2.6 million that we get at this time. So we're getting $3 million in addition to the $2.6 million. So that's over a 100% increase in the funding for county veteran service officers. The attitude of legislation is that we give this extra money. We want to see what the results are before we approve this extra funding again next year. This is a one-year-only increase in the funding. So to put a number on it for the sake of discussion, if my office receives for the general fund approximately $22,000 in normal funding every year, and now we get an additional $50,000, the state is going to want to see that money being spent for veterans. End of story. How are we going to do that? That's what we have to come up with as a county.
Now, will they be getting an additional $25,000 for a total of $50,000?
I am just giving you an estimate right now. They haven't decided exactly how they're going to do it yet, but the thought is that it's going to be 100% more than what we normally get. And they want to see that money being spent on veterans. End of story. And it's a one-year-only allocation.
Okay, so it's basically doubling the funding.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's why we hired you, Terry, because you were the best, and you think outside the box. So.
Thanks, sir. And I have lots of ideas, and I don't necessarily think this is the time for those ideas, but it is something that we as a county need to consider because the state is going to want to see results, and they're going to want to know how this money was spent. And just throwing it into the general fund is not the answer.
Well, that, I don't think that would be the intent of this board, too. If the money comes in specific
right.
for veterans, then we want to see it spent there.
Exactly. And it's going to be for outreach and, as I read in here, hiring new personnel. Now, my opinion, I don't necessarily think we're going to need to hire new personnel, especially since I'm already only a part-time employee. So these are things to consider. What are we going to do? This money could be showing up within the next 2 or 3 months. They're going to base it on my January 1st through June 30th workload units, which I have the report. It is ready to go out the door. All I'm waiting for is the auditor, Joe Lowe, to give me his input on it. And it's out the door. I have claimed 113 workload units compared to what Mr. Martin normally did of somewhere around 65. I do a lot of outreach already, which I've talked to you guys before. I go on TSPN. I go to the Rotary Clubs. I go to different things. I write articles. I brought one of the things that one of my ideas is these are pamphlets that I create. Now, I don't have a color printer. I had a friend print this for me in color, and this is what I print in black and white. What a difference, huh? So, anyway.
Terry, one question. What's that money? Is there specifics where that money and how that money is spent on what? Or is it just has to be spent on veterans in our county?
What they're looking for, as I read this letter, it talked about new hires and outreach.
Okay.
And as an idea, if I was to go to a full-time on a Friday, I would like to set aside Friday. The office still be closed. That office has been closed on Friday for a number of years. And I use that time to travel to Kirkwood Meadows, to Shenandoah Valley, to Ione or wherever, and reach Ione's, reach veterans where they're at. That's outreach. That's what they want to see me do.
How is the state, Terry, on our backlog for veteran cases?
I originally started this off with saying that 296 was shot down, but it was piggybacked on another one. They actually added it to this other one that was approved an additional $3 million to do stand-up Tiger teams in the three offices, San Diego, L.A., and Oakland. The main offices that adjudicate claims to send up Tiger teams of 12 additional adjudicators to get the backlog reduced.
What about the claims that are out of the state?
That's what I'm talking about, the different states, that the VAROs, that's the okay. one I was looking for, that okay. in the VA regional offices. There's three in the state of California. Each one of them is going to hire additional 12 employees to reduce the backlog. And right now, they've already reduced it, according to them, all the claims that are over 2 years old. Now they're coming down and working on the claims that's, you know, obviously over a year. So they're making progress, because this is a big thing that Secretary Shinkey has to address with the national VA.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Terry.
Okay.
Terry.
Sure. Thank you.
Any other public comment at this time? Board members, any items?
Chairman.
President Plaz.
I see a contingent in our audience of our Amador County Historical Society. I just wanted to point out to the audience here and whatever board members weren't able to make it, that they had their grand opening of our county museum a couple of weeks back. Phil Gerlani was tasked to be spearhead in all areas. He signed up to help with the construction work and so forth, and before he knew it, ended up president of the Historical Society and got the ball rolling on that. And I just think that we all need to commend these folks. We don't have a formal resolution yet. It was started, but with all the vacations and other issues, has not been completed as far as a certificate of recognition. But I'd like to recognize the Historical Society for all the work that they did on the museum. If you haven't had a chance to get out there, they did a phenomenal job on restoring it, both inside and outside, from the displays on the inside to the trees on the outside, and the grounds really look terrific. The displays look terrific. They're in the process of opening it up for the public at this time on a limited basis, and I just think we owe the Historical Society and all the volunteers that they've got here today and many that I don't see here today that were involved in the process a great thanks and expression of gratitude for the effort that they put forth on behalf of the county. Excellent job, folks.
And could I ask the members of the Historical Society to stand so we could recognize you, please? All right.
There you are.
Mr. Gerlani comes up. I'd like to say, I did attend that grand opening, and it looked good enough to move into. It was actually a real well-done job, and a lot of local people basically taking care of their community. I'd like to commend him for a very good job. A lot of work, too.
Supervisor Bonetto, just a couple of brief comments. I'd like to accept this recognition on behalf of all the members of the Historical Society and those that are not members that also volunteered there. We were able to work together with the county on this project. We overcame some obstacles that had presented themselves in the past. And by working together, we were able to get the museum back open. It's open Friday, Saturday, and Sundays, I believe, now from 11 to 3. Thank the board, particularly for the opportunity to do this work. Without support from the board, this would not have happened. It's something you guys can hang your hat on. It's an instance where the government has actually worked in favor of getting something done that's a positive for all the people in this county. And you guys should be proud of that. And also, hopefully this will give our Historical Society a little bit of credence and a little bit of believability that we are an organization that can get something done. Thank you.
You've certainly proven that.
Thank you, President.
Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Georgia. Big one.
I guess you all know me, Georgia Fox. I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart that this has taken place, because for 5 years, that's been my wish and my goal to see that museum open again. And I give Phil Gerlani complete credit for spearheading this whole thing and you supervisors that were involved. So I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Okay.
Thank you, Georgia. I have to say, I went over on Saturday. I had company come in from Idaho, my wife's aunt and uncle, and so we took them over Saturday and went through the museum, and Georgia graciously opened the mind model for them and took them through the mind model, and they were awed by that, and it was awesome, and thank you, Georgia, for that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Everyone from the Historical Society, for all your work and for being here today. Stay if you really want some excitement. So, all right. Any more public comment? Hearing none, we're going to go on to the consent agenda. Just for the public's information, under items 7, E, and F on the consent agenda, the general services administration items, they were not on the packets that were printed out for the board, but they did run through our review process, and they are on the packets in the back of the room, and they appeared on the online version. So the public has had those. They have been reviewed by the board by myself and by General Services, by County Counsel's office. So for some reason, they didn't appear on the board copies. But anyway, they have all been reviewed. So I don't think there's an issue. Jennifer, there's not an issue with having those on the agenda then. Okay, so, and there is a one consent agenda addendum. This is on eligibility worker 1, employment and training worker 1, Health and Human Services, and approval to fill those two positions. This did run through the Administrative Committee, so it's an addendum to the consent agenda. And I believe, Supervisor Plaz, you had one item you wanted to pull.
Well, one of the items I'd just like to discuss, and I see our sheriff and our GSA director here, is item number F under miscellaneous, 7F it would be.
We'll pull that item and
Briefly discuss here.
Look for approval for the rest of the consent agenda as well as the addendum.
So moved, Mr. Chairman, with the addendum and the pulling of miscellaneous 7F.
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda, the addendum, all but item 7F. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Let's take on item 7F now. Supervisor Plaz.
I just wanted to bring up something that we had discussed, Supervisor Forster and I, Chairman Forster and I, in our participation on the Properties Committee for the county. The discussion was brought up about one of the properties that we don't own, but we're saddled with a long-term lease that is bleeding our county coffers significantly monthly, and that is the HHS building and that lease up there. And the idea was brought forward that due to the fact that that property owner wants to sell that building, has offered it up for sale, and the fact that it is extremely close to one of the pieces of property that was considered for a new jail site, the idea came forward that we might consider utilizing some of the AB 900 grant funds that we were awarded to potentially purchase that building and retrofit it, rebuild it, harden it, whatever the term is, to potentially be used as a jail in that location, and thereby taking advantage of the fact that a lot of the wastewater and water infrastructure and all the things that were going to be additional costs for us on the piece of property almost next door that we were considering for a jail site are already in place, would help us to potentially satisfy or solve one of our problems, one of our financial problems and drains, which is the 20-year lease that we have on that building, and be able to take advantage of much lower lease rates that are in place now to rehouse those services that are currently housed in that facility now. So when I saw this RFP process to evaluate that provides the best value to evaluate jail construction options and costs utilizing the scope of work, I was hoping and discussed briefly with GSA Director Hopkins that if some sort of analysis of that potential option could be included in that evaluation under this RFP. So that's the reason for my wishing to pull it, and would if anybody has any questions for those concerned here.
It just may increase the cost a bit, and if the board is willing to add that to the site that was listed there, we listed three sites, and we list this would be a fourth site, to just negotiate with that firm a fair price to include that if they.
And for the record, you are? For the record, you are?
John Hopkins, General Services Director. Sorry.
And you and I discussed this additionally. It may not be possible, but we don't know that until we ask the question. So I think it's a good issue to carry forward and at least see if there's any possibility of using the framework of that building and breaking it down to a shell or whatever needs to be done. Sheriff Ryan, do you have any comments?
Yes, Chairman. Thank you. Martin Ryan, Amador County Sheriff. The reason we went with this process in the first place to do the initial evaluations was, the data is very old with regards to the properties that we have originally looked at. With regards to the existing facility, I continue to get questions with regards to feasibility of doing something there. Quite honestly, that has never been studied to the degree that we're looking at through this process. I think that needs to be done so that we can get a final handle on that to move this process forward. I appreciate Supervisor Plaza's thinking outside the box on this issue. The goal here is to get us a facility, to get us out of the existing facility, to hopefully prevent and escape some potential liabilities down the road with regards to the existing facility that we have. So I would be in support of moving forward with that assessment of the HHS building in order to come to some resolution as to where we are with this process. As Director Hopkins has stated in the past, we have an upcoming date. It is out there a little bit in 2017 with regards to the AB 900 process, but also recognizing the fact that San Joaquin County has pulled out of that process and surrendered their conditional award, which is close to $100 million. We are the last man standing when it comes to Phase 1 conditional awards through this process. And so I think it's imperative moving forward that we show the Board of State and Community Corrections that we are seriously engaged in this process and wish to move forward with it. So I thank you for the thought process, John. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. Sheriff, does the date you reference in 2017, is that a drop-dead date for completion of a facility or final identification thereof or bid acceptance for construction? What's that timeline?
No, as long as the project has been approved by the State Public Works Board by June of 2017, then the project can take effect.
And the funding is quite a lengthy process to get them to that point.
Yeah, I would imagine it is. Nothing moves
fast. Hence the time frame, because we've got the project is estimated at about a 2-year project to construct, depending on what
right.
we come up with. So 2017 is going to be here before we know it.
You have a couple questions. First, for Sheriff Ryan, do you know why San Joaquin County pulled out?
There was an article in the B. I think it had to do with A, staffing costs was part of it, and the match is probably the other part of it. They had, close to $100 million conditional, and I don't believe they qualified for the 5% match that we do as a small county. I think they were still at 25%, perhaps maybe 15%.
Yeah, staffing numbers even here are quite high.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why going through this process and keeping in mind when we initially planned for a new facility, it is taking advantage of the new technologies and the new building techniques and the new designs for jail facilities that actually reduce the amount of staff compared to what we would use today. It is much more efficient, much more labor-friendly, and we can actually get away with less than we could under existing facilities.
I believe
it is absolutely expensive.
I believe, too, we talked to him about if we had to staff up completely, if we built a jail, or if we could basically ramp up over time staffing numbers, and I think they said that was acceptable.
Yes, and that was one of the initial concerns that state sheriffs in general had with the process is what they're requiring us to staff at the bed level rate. And so we argued successfully to have that reduced to a safe staffing as determined by the county sheriff. So we are able to, if we have a facility and we only have 120 beds filled of 165, we don't have to staff for 165 inmates.
Also, I believe Calaveras County's jail, I think, is complete or real close to it.
I think, John, you have an update?
Close, yes.
And what I'd like to know is how their numbers are coming out from what they were basically estimated at to actuals. That'd be some numbers I'd really like to see. Those numbers would probably change depending how good or bad they administrated their project. But I would like to know those numbers. That gives kind of probably similar project, I think, similar area. Just an idea. Kind of
less square footage, but similar population.
They're a 160 bed facility. I haven't talked to them in probably 4 months or so. I can't speak to any details, but it's my understanding they're having some challenges with staffing the existing jail. But I can get details.
Oh, I've heard that. Yeah, I think they have budget constraints as it is, and they're looking to hire, I think, 9 new positions. And yeah, they're having issues, I hear.
Even Placer kept their facility vacant for a while, and they're starting to fill it, but you're probably aware of that, too.
Any other questions specific to the agenda item?
I'd just say thank you for willingness. I know we hadn't had a chance to discuss this, but because it was so close to that original piece of property that we were considering up there and that there was an opportunity there to sort of kill two birds with one stone and solve some greater problems, I thought that it was worth investigating anyway what it would take to harden that building to the level that a jail needs to be hardened to. And just what was the square footage, estimated square footage of our proposed new jail design on a bare piece of ground? I know it was about 160, 165 bed, but I don't remember the square footage.
I believe 62 or 64,000 square feet.
And the HHS is around 50,000, I think.
Yeah, just under 50,000.
And we'd have to get approval for that site as well with BSCC for that. They do have to approve your site selection prior to allowing us to move forward with it. So that's part of the process. John and I are going to be meeting with our new representative for this area to discuss those issues, and this is going to be one of them, as far as their perception on viability and whether or not this would be an acceptable location for them. Because
had they signed off on the previous piece of property, the SPI ground?
They did, that and Wicklow.
Uh-huh.
Well, to recall, the board stalled a little bit to provide. We had to provide site assurance through an agreement.
Right, that's why we purchased Wicklow.
And we in that period of time when we purchased Wicklow, the board asked the state for an extension, and then once that went through, the board provided site assurance for Wicklow.
Okay,
we need a motion on that item then, and that'll include the consideration of the HHS building within the concept of the evaluation.
Is there a limit not to exceed that you'd like to increase that to?
This line item of funding, the $50,000, what budget line item is that coming out of? I didn't chase down the number.
That comes out of the capital facilities fees that are directly used for jail development and construction.
Try to get it done within that.
So that $50,000 is a not to exceed. You're going out for an RFP. So essentially, could we potentially just leave it the not to exceed $50,000 and include evaluation of this facility in the RFP process? You're dispensing. Excuse
yes.
me. You want to dispense with the RFP process, and
yes.
So you've got a firm you've already.
We've been in discussions with. We sort of tickled a couple of them, mm-hmm. Three of them, to see where they were at. The information that we got back. It's difficult to find a firm that offers the financing options, the architectural options, the construction management, and the estimating options all in one firm. There is one in Sacramento. Actually, there were a few that I asked for estimates, and the one was reasonable, very reasonable, compared to the other two. So because of the uniqueness of that, I'm asking the board to just dispense with that RFP process because of the uniqueness of that, and to negotiate with this one firm, because I don't think if we were to go through the RFP process, one, I've got to develop an RFP, the legal adds to it, especially locally or even regionally, that we'd be successful at receiving any proposals anyway, other than these guys that I contacted that are within the region of Sacramento-Stockton area. So I'm asking to dispense with that. But with that, I have a pretty good idea with the three sites that they looked at, because the same scope of work was given to all three firms of that price. So that's why I'm wondering if we add another site to it, it is more than likely going to increase that cost.
So what would you like it to be increased to?
Another 10?
What I had suggested earlier to Martin.
I'd make a motion that we approve the dispensing of the RFP process and allow the GSA director, CAO, and sheriff to negotiate a contract not to exceed $60,000 for a firm to provide best value to evaluate jail construction options with the inclusion of the HHS building location included in that scope of work and evaluative process.
Second that.
I've been moved and second. Everyone understand the motion?
Not to exceed then $60,000.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
Sheriff.
I think that building will flush out pretty quick, whether it's cost effective or not.
All right. With that, we'll move on to our regular agenda. Item 6, Jackson Valley Irrigation District, discussion of possible action relative to an amendment to the revolving line of credit agreement between the county and JVID. Mr. Frederick, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Stephen Frederick, General Manager of Jackson Valley Irrigation District. I'm not sure where we left off. Maybe Supervisor Chairman Forrester could help me out with what happened in the admin committee. I'll give you a brief history of what's happened here in the last several weeks. We're getting close to completing our treatment plant. There's several costs that are coming up that are not associated with that are eligible for grant funding through our Prop 50 grant funding. The Prop 50 grant funding was only eligible for construction of the treatment plant. We're running into a situation where a lot of the O&M and maintenance costs are starting to come forward. We're running into a situation we don't have ratepayers right now, so we're dealing with a situation where the JVID board has made the decision to distinguish between the irrigation district and the domestic side of the district as two different entities. So they've asked me as the manager to come and maybe revise our existing revolving loan to amend it to include the startup and O&M cost and a couple other future costs that we're going to incur for the next couple years. So I sent a memo up. I think it went through the admin committee, kind of spelling out in detail what the objective is.
You received it, yes, also.
So I don't think I need to elaborate on that in depth. Maybe if you have any questions of...
We have a copy of the original agreement. We have a copy of the first amendment to the revolving line that you put together with Greg Gillott, our county council. Two of those under the recitals under D and E are very much the same as the previous contract. The reason why you want those is for quicker reimbursement to your contractors, whether it be for the engineering, design, surveying, right-of-way acquisition, environmental review, or for actual construction. The third is the one that's a little bit different for the initial startup costs that are not covered by the state, as I understand from attending the JVID meeting and talking to you. But the question that came up on admin was on the O&M, what are those costs from the plant? Some of those were spelled out in your June 18th memo, the cost of electricity, communication, chemicals, miscellaneous plant equipment and supplies needed for operation that needed to be purchased. Anything else you can think of?
No, not that I can think of. And when we are able to start up, we are going to have one retail customer. At this point, we don't know what the rate is going to be for that customer because we are in a rate study. That rate study should be completed in the next few months to know what we're going to charge. That customer would be Lake Amador Recreation Area. Outside of the recreation area, we are not going to be providing water to any other user until Phase 2 distribution. We're funded for Phase 2 distribution. So the scenario is if it costs us, I'll just use a generic example of $3,000 for operating and maintenance of the treatment plant, and our retail customer only provides us with $2,000, we need to subsidize that somehow. And JVID was not willing to pull out of their irrigation funds for that subsidy.
I have a question on that. What was their thinking as far as having two different separate entities?
I cannot really speak for them. They just would like to distinguish between the irrigation district. You know, they've worked very hard to develop that system, and they would like to keep that money available to the farmers of the irrigation district. I guess that would be the best way to explain it.
I think they're very protective of the interests of the agricultural community down there. But what percentage of the use of the water at JBID goes to residential?
For future domestic use? We're talking estimated, when we're fully built out, roughly 300 acre feet. Now, our storage uses 20. Last year, we used over 11,000 acre feet, and we're dealing with 300 acre feet for domestic. So it's probably less than 0.5% off the top of my head. They're concerned about the uncertainty of the domestic system because it's grant funded and so forth.
Well, it seems like that concern should have arose at the time of applying for the grants, not after you've accepted the grants, started the construction process, and then say, well, we don't want to be involved in domestic water supply. I mean, I find the position that board has taken sort of unrealistic, to be honest with you. I mean, the reason for the distinction between irrigation and potable water is because Jackson Valley Irrigation District was formed originally as just that, an irrigation district. And people chose to, of their own accord, connect to irrigation lines for potable water use. And then we've got this issue where it's not supposed to be used for potable water, so then you apply for grants to distinguish a potable water system separate from the irrigation system. But the entity as a whole doesn't want to support that and wants this fund to provide operation and maintenance costs. And I don't agree with that thinking, quite frankly.
No, that's one reason I brought that question up. I kind of feel a little bit the same. And the other concern I have is you're asking us to fund basically your potable water system. And question I'd have is, if it doesn't, if it's not financially able to fly on its own, who's going to pay us back?
I think it is going to be financially solvent in the end. You need to go through the process of having a rate study done, but you can't do that until you know the amount of customers that are going to be hooked up. I mean, do you have the full number at this point?
The full number, estimated full number until engineering is completed, is around 140 customers. That would be two retail customers, one being Lake Amador Recreation Area and the other one being the Oaks. Now, the Oaks would be a retail customer that would provide water to at least two-thirds of our customers. So they are going to be a large retail customer of ours. And they are at the beginning of our Phase 2 project, meaning that when construction starts, we would be able to provide water to them within a short time. I'll I'll elaborate a little bit more on Supervisor Onetto's question. We are in a planning grant right now for $500,000. And that's to do the planning and engineering to get the Phase 2 project shovel-ready. Now, that is to design a whole system for the entire valley. In initial talks, since we are going after the SRF funding as a disadvantaged community to be eligible for grant funding, we're not able to go out and get a large sum of money. The estimated value of that is going to be about $3 million. The estimated value of the entire project is about $7 million. So they're going to have to break up the distribution into phases. That original Phase 2 funding would probably provide enough customers, enough money to provide water to about 40 customers, and that's including the Oaks as a retail customer. So,
I think I hear what you're saying, but my concern is, there's also talks about the soft costs in there that are not associated with any of the grants that you're going to have to be paying. And what I'm looking at, if all gets done, it's all built, everything's finaled out, and there's still not enough money in that system to pay back the county. Most of it is upfront costs that would be used like revolving line of credit, so it's just dollars in, dollars out. That would probably come back. But some of it's going to be used for soft costs. And the question I'd have is, well, who's going to eat that if they're not able to pay at that point in time? Is it going to be JVIDA or Irrigation District as a whole? Or they could say, no, we're separate entities, and that entity can't pay you back. Or they could say, hey, we will pick up that cost as JVID. That's what I'd like to know.
I just don't see a big an issue here, to tell you the truth. I've been attending the JVID meetings where they've talked about this. The board has voted 5-0 to support the potable water project to get the customers off. They know they need to get the customers off of their ag supply line because of the water coming down from Jackson being tainted by the Jackson treatment plant. So the board, JVID board, has supported this 5-0. They've been, as Greg said in his memo, they've been stellar on their repayment record. I think what I heard from the board is they wanted to tie all this in to one loan package so that they could segregate it off from the, and that's the reason why they separated the district now from ag and residential users. So they wanted to tie this all into the $500,000 bridge loan to segregate it away from their ag system. I don't think there's any question that they'll be able to repay this if there ever comes a point where additional costs come up. But at this point, they still have to have the customer base about refined, but they still need to go through a rate process and design a rate to be able to repay the loan. And that's what they're
sure.
going to do.
And I didn't have a problem with originally supporting this with JVID as a unit. But when they're separate, when basically they're splitting the units, saying we have JVID irrigation and JVID potable, I don't have a problem with them separating either, as long as they say this loan that we're making, that JVID irrigation, will back it up.
I don't think there's any question.
I agree with that, though. I agree with that. I mean, the history of the thing is that they were allowed to hook up for irrigation, and then they started using it for potable water, and that shouldn't happen in the first place. But that's a long time ago, and that's history. So
sure.
Well, unfortunately, there's no way to stop that from happening because Joe Spano with the Division of State Health, Public Health, came in and said, you will find an answer for this, and this is what they worked out. And he was one of the people that instigated this from the state level, Department of State Health.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But the I look at it like similar to where we've been with the water agency on these situations, where this fund has been used and loans for development of infrastructure and those types of projects, but never for operational and maintenance types costs. And operations and maintenance has to be borne by the ratepayers. And if you haven't got ratepayers established yet or a rate established yet, and they have the opportunity to Prop 218 protest any rate change on that, you could find yourself with a group of ratepayers in a small system, very similar to what
AWA has been involved in with Comanche and Lamell Heights and other places that just flat vote down a rate increase, and then where are you? I mean, this is an indebtedness of JBID as a whole entire entity, and not to be split out because they now, after having applied for grants to construct a potable water system, don't want to support or subsidize that system until it achieves its sustainability.
Yeah, I would have felt better if we'd have had their total assurance that they'd go ahead and cover this.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with basically making the line of credit available as long as JVID is going to guarantee it.
I think I can help Supervisor Plaz with the, I won't go into whole historical how we evolved and got here, but if you recall, we received $2 million. Originally, it was a $4 million grant. The $4 million was supposed to provide distribution to the Oaks and to customers to where, once construction was completed, the system could support itself. Back in 2008, with the financial crisis, we were cut back to $2 million, which only gave us enough funding to complete the raw water line and the treatment plant. Now we have the Department of Health looking at a brand new treatment plant sitting in the Lake Amador Recreation Area with a failing treatment plant that's been under a current boil water notice, asking us to provide water to Lake Amador Recreation Area as soon as possible, and that will be in the next couple of months. So now we are in the scenario that we do not have customers from that distribution because we got cut back from that original $2 million, and now we have the Department of Health asking us as JVID, a public entity, to service another public facility, Lake Amador Recreation Area, with water. And we don't have the ratepayers to support that request. And that's
sure.
Where they've asked us for the county being this loan. Now, to elaborate a little more on that is I've projected that here in about 2 years, construction should be completed on the distribution line to the Oaks. Now, the Oaks is kind of our ace in the hole. If we get to the Oaks, we have plenty of money to support the system. And
provided they approve a rate increase, correct?
Well,
that
new,
has not
new
been
rate.
Decided
new rate.
Yet.
Yeah.
The rate study has not been completed yet. What this request is basically asking the county to help us support the system so we can supply water to the Lake Amador Recreation Area until distribution to exit other ratepayers is available. And that's projected to be 1 to 2 years. Now, again, it's not expected. Whatever Lake Amador Recreation puts into the rate, anything above and beyond that, it might be the fact that we never go to the loan because we can streamline the facility so much that Lake Amador Recreation can't support the operating costs. But at this point, we have one customer to bear, an operator, two operators, part-time operators, the chemicals, et cetera, and we have all the, just use a generic term, the brooms and the brushes and whatever paint that you need to get the facility up and running that the Department of Health and the Prop 50 program wasn't willing to fund.
I think it makes sense to segregate those funds too and not commingle them so you can keep direct and correct control over all of those expenses that are directly related to the potable system.
Oh, I agree with that, sure. Just
internally.
Yes, internally. That's right.
Yeah.
But as far I agree with that, but as far as this revolving line of credit, I would like basically JVID to come in and say, yes, they will back it up.
I just don't understand where you're getting where they're not going to back it.
Well, they're sending two separate entities.
The memo, the document doesn't say that. The amendment still calls out irrigation district.
Bone is going to Jackson Valley Irrigation District, though.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can't ignore the statements made by their board as expressed in this memo.
Statements made by their board are they want to protect
deciding
not
to co-mingle
funds. But they know they have to provide by a 5-0 vote. They know they're providing water to for a potable use.
Well, let me ask you this then. It is true the agreement is JVID But the memo says, you know, they're two separate entities. The question I would have is, if we go ahead and sign this agreement, is it going to be viewed as also an obligation of JVID, or is two separate entities and it's not JVID's obligation to repay this revolving line of credit?
JVID created the two separate entities
okay.
with the act of a resolution.
Okay.
So they're still going to be identified as Jackson Valley Irrigation District. The books and so forth in the office are going to be distinguished by two different domestic and irrigation.
Okay, so basically this agreement will, based on your memo aside, this agreement is going to be between JVID, both units, your potable and your irrigation.
And I have a board meeting tomorrow evening. We can distinguish that even further. If you would like them to identify that the irrigation district will back the loan.
Well, and regardless of what the memo says, the contracts
sure.
still identify Jackson Valley Irrigation District as the responsible party for repayment of the loan.
That's true, yeah.
I'm not meaning to put my foot in my mouth because I don't know what the state's going to do with the grant funding, so forth. We've already been through the situation since 2008 where they pulled the money back and pulled it forward. But my best guess would be in a year and a half to 2 years, we would have enough customers to be able to repay the loan. And that's why we extended it out to 2016.
I understand both sides of the questioning here. And I just think as we, the County Board of Supervisors, I mean, it would hinder us not to give this loan out to JVID in regards to drinking water is a safety commodity that we, as a governing board in the state of California for Amador County, have to make sure that people out there in our community have safe drinking water. And I realize it's JVID's, but what they're asking for is a loan. So with that said, I think, and I read the contract and I was at admin, this all pertains to JVID. I understand Supervisor O'Neill's concerns and Supervisor Plaza's and Supervisor's Huitano's concerns, but I think when it comes to the safety of the public in our county, we have to do the right thing, and the right thing would be giving this loan to JVID and making sure that JVID, and I'm sure they will, they've done it in the past, will adhere to the contract.
Well, he does have a meeting tomorrow night. He can take our concerns back if that be the wish of the board.
I think it should definitely be made very clear to the JVID board that, although I understand they, you know, would want to internally, I mean, it's good business practices to be able to monitor your two entities on the potable water side and the irrigation water side, but to recognize that JVID is the public entity responsible now for the providing of a safe potable water source to its customers, not Amador County, but JVID is. They are the public entity that has, you know, that is their mission statement, so to speak. So I just want them to understand that.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with the loan, none whatsoever, but I do am concerned about, you know, repayment. And we've got a couple out there that, you know, we're still waiting on, the Water Agency being one, and the city, or actually City of Sutter Creek through ARSA as another.
Well, JVID's name is on the contracts with the state. Amador County's name is not on those contracts, and JVID's name is on this First Amendment to the revolving line of credit as the payer of the loan. So the obligation stands with JVID no matter what the memos or anything else says.
I would like to add the fact, too, is the requests are separated into three different requests. One, and I'll break it down to, there's a planning request for a revolving line of credit, meaning when I have to pay a contractor for environmental consulting, so forth, I can pay him within a reasonable amount of time before I get reimbursement from the state. Now, that's just like the existing loan.
Yeah, that's what it was originally done for. I recognize that. Yeah. It wasn't done for operational costs.
Exactly. And then the second request is for construction same idea, to be able to pay contractors instead of consultants, but during the construction phase of the project. Now, the O&M part of the project is going to be a very minimal amount requested off of that loan. I would suspect maybe $1,000, maybe a few hundred dollars. So in a year's time, you know, we might be talking about $10,000 to $15,000 pulled from that loan to be able to pay our operator, maybe some chemicals we weren't expecting to have to purchase. So we're not asking for the $500,000 as beginning, or, you know, for startup costs. We're only going to pull from that loan as needed, and within a couple years' time, I would be really surprised for it to be up to $30,000 to $40,000.
Oh, just as long as the irrigation side of the house understands that that's their bill come 2016 or whatever the end of this agreement date is.
Exactly.
And Supervisor, I think they understood that when they voted for it, because it was a 5-0 vote. There was no dissension on the board, I think.
Vote on what, though? Mm-hmm. A vote on, what was the vote on?
The vote was to go enter into the contract, Prop 50 contracts with the state for the potable water system. Every vote that they've taken has been 5-0. I'll grant it, there was some grumbling by a couple board members who are kind of more ag people, but you know what? They supported the common cause put forth by State Health that you need to find a solution. Jackson wouldn't have polluted the stream in the first place. We wouldn't have this. So. You better talk to your constituents. So.
You know, I have a question, Jennifer. We have the memo, and we have the contract. And the memo is almost a little bit in conflict with the contract as far as first page of that memo. As far as keeping the funds separate and not commingling, do you see that being an issue, or would the contract basically rule?
Jennifer, can you turn your mic on, please?
Contract.
Is that better?
Yeah.
It seems to me that the contract should govern. The contract says JVID. It doesn't break it down. It says JVID and Irrigation District formed pursuant to California Water Code 20500. So whether they've internally divided up their accounting, I don't think it makes that much difference. The board, as I understand it, there's one board. There's one Jackson Valley Irrigation District that was formed under state law. So I think they are on the hook.
Yeah, contract's a contract. That's probably the strongest hammer.
Should be covering those operations costs.
I think the other thing that also
the money to do it from us.
That may strengthen that, too, is that this is an amendment to an existing agreement. And if I'm understanding you correctly, whatever internal organizational issues they've done has been after the original contract. So I don't think they can change who the contracting party is. That's not changed in the amendment.
It's going to be the same five board members who govern over the domestic side of the district and the irrigation side. They might go as far as creating a new day to meet for the domestic side of the district, but the JVID is still the governing body for both entities.
Okay. Any other board questions? Any public comment at this time? Hearing none, board members?
Well, since it's in the contract, did you want to say something, John?
Well, just under discussion. I mean, I'm all for the revolving loan to get this construction project going and so forth. But no question on that, and the prompt payment of contractors and so forth. But I think operation and maintenance costs are a responsibility of the district, and should be left with the district and not treated as a portion of the amendment to this loan agreement.
Well, I think they still will be the responsibility of the district. It's just they wanted to wrap it all into one package, and these costs they just found out, what, 3 or 4 months ago, were ineligible for reimbursement by the state. So they want to wrap it into this one package. It'll still be repaid by JVID to the board.
But there,
as you recall, in the changes we made to the water development agreement, which is now called the water supply agreement, I think these are eligible costs now.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with doing that. I just like to make it real clear. If 2016 comes and they say we don't have the money to pay it, that JVID Irrigation District will pay it, We're not going to be extending the loan. Now, if you haven't got your whole project done, you know, I'd like to see it done by that date. But say, if you haven't got the project done, you need to extend it. Okay, we could talk about it then. I don't want to say we'll extend it because you haven't got your O&M costs, you know.
Well, that just did. I mean, when they roll O&M costs into this new group of ratepayers, you know, you anticipate having more ratepayers here in 2 years. When you roll that in, it's going to be rolled in very similar to the way AWA just did it as debt service for that system. You're not going to hand maybe accumulated $30,000 to $40,000 worth of costs into one chunk from the newfound ratepayers that you've got. It's going to be repayment, either repayment to the county or repayment to an internal loan from the irrigation side of your house to the potable water side of your house. But it's going to be debt service that the ratepayers are asked to serve over time, not in one lump. So how are you going to pay the one lump 2 years from now if you don't pull out of the irrigation side of the house?
If the customers don't approve to pay, a JVID is still, as Jennifer said, on the hook for repayment.
I just don't want to come in here in 2016 saying, hey, yeah, we've got this money, we can't pay it, and extend this thing out. I don't want to do that.
Well, I mean, we can talk about it if they're not done with construction, most assuredly. But I agree with that. I think what I want to do is send a strong message back to their board tomorrow night that, you know, they're on the hook for this and we expect it in 2016.
Exactly.
So with that, I'll make that a motion that we go ahead and authorize this amendment.
Motion, is there a second?
Second.
And second to approve the amendment, loan amendment. Further discussion. You really need to convey the sentiments of the board to your board, and stress strongly as possible so that they understand by creating that to the two separate departments. Now it is there is a question being raised because of that. So even though the contract stipulates JVID is on the hook for it, you still need to convey those sentiments to your board as strongly as possible.
And under discussion, you know, that it's their obligation, and contractually we will hold them to it. So I just want them to know that.
I think your concerns are valid, and I'll relay the message tomorrow evening. Hopefully Chairman Forrester can attend and represent your concerns. But thank you.
Well, we haven't voted yet. But.
Oh, thank you.
It might not hurt for your board to put together a letter to send to this board just reinforcing that their intention, even though they are bound by contract, just reinforcing their intentions to repay the loan.
Yeah, if there's no other source of money 2 years from now, right at the end of 2016, they're going to be borrowing from the irrigation side of the house to make this loan payment back to us.
And, that is a genuine concern, that because the 218 process is out there as strong as ever now in the communities and able to turn down the requests for not just rate increases, but rates to be set. So you have to get through that process.
Yeah, I do have a question on that, and we're probably can't get the answer right away, but if it's like a cease and desist from the state, I don't see where they can get out of it.
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 5-0. And Steve, you have your marching order. Now you can say thank you. So.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll go on to item 7, Level 2 Infill Correctional Facilities Project, discussion and possible action relative to an update by Mr. Bob Sleppy, California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, regarding a notice of availability of a draft environmental impact report for the proposed subject project.
Hi, Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
I have a family has some property down in the vicinity, so I'd like to recuse myself.
Hold on just a second, Mr. Sleppy.
Okay.
We'll wait for Supervisor Onetto to step down.
How long is your presentation going to go, Mr.
Slutsky? We can go just as fast as you have time. We don't mean to, even as the first try at this little PowerPoint. Maybe you won't even come on, so it'll be really fast. I'll just start. Number one, I'm Bob Slutsky from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. I work in the facilities planning and in our construction management office in Sacramento. I again appreciate trying to get invited and getting invited to come up here and tell you what's actually in our brand new, recently released draft environmental impact report for our proposed infill project. I'll try to whip through this, but of course I'm available for questions. Let's go back to the starting point. Starting point is that department went through a planning process about a year and a half ago that says what's the vision for the department. First time we've ever had anything that comprehensive. And a couple of things come out of it is instead of having all these high security level 3 and level 4 prisons like we have at Mill Creek currently, we need to create more of a lower security capacity in our prison system because we're realizing that we can afford to move inmates to that lower classification. When I say that, of course, our outer perimeter security is always the same between a level 4 maximum, a high security level 3, and a level 2. So it's only the inside that's different. We get a bill a year ago, a Budget Act bill, that said we want you to go build 2,376 new level 2 beds. You said you could use an existing model of a prison you've got, so you don't get to start with a brand new design. It's down at our Corcoran facility in our substance treatment facility. So we had this 792-bed kind of module. We told legislature we could do this for a certain price, and so they set that price at $800 million. That's our total authority to be able to do this project. The legislature said, well, by the way, if you're going to build these new ones, which are fully programmed and have all the kind of space that inmates need to serve their time, but both medical, mental health, vocational, educational, we want you to close one of our most expensive to operate and not so great prisons down in Norco. So we're actually not tit for tat adding beds, but we are adding beds that are much more in the future of corrections. The legislature, which I'll show the slide in a minute, actually told us where we could potentially put these new infill projects, and so our environmental impact report process has been a statewide look at we're down to 4 sites now, but we actually started with 11. Here's all the places we started from. The legislation was specific to these prisons because we said we thought we had enough room at these prisons to build an infill facility. We're not building a brand new prison that would have a new warden and a new structure. We are building simply an addition to an existing prison that gets only an increment of staffing. We have dropped one of these sites because we just didn't have enough engineering information to be able to talk about water and sewer, the facility down in Chino. Our proposal when we came out of the gate last year was a 1,584-bed addition to Mill Creek State Prison, so we double up our little 700-bed facility, and a 700-bed facility down at R.J. Donovan in San Diego. So that's our two proposed projects, but we have equally looked at all these other sites. So if you do seek the entire EIR, it is a large pile of paper. We actually, the framework for this is that we have a rating within our prison system for the type of medical treatment we can offer. We have 11 prisons that are qualified for intermediate care, which is sort of a Kaiser General out clinic type facility, not acute care. The acute care facilities are down at Vacaville and the prison we're just about to open in Stockton. So these are pretty well staffed in terms of clinical space, but not acute care. We have 11 of those statewide. 5 of those just have no place to build, so we ended up with a 7. The 7 only have 5 sites between them. Mill Creek, been around for a while. One of our good prisons, they're all good, but this one we feel is well operated and it's located well in the foothills. It's got a good circumference of where people live, and it's always had good utilities. Very significant, and it's been a lot of questions in our public outreach, is it was really overcrowded like all our prisons a couple years ago, almost to 4,000 inmates. We are now, if you've been reading the papers about the little situation we got going with the federal 3-judge panel,
You know, we're down now to either 137.5% of our design bed. Design bed's about 1,700, so that's one bed per cell, versus about, we would like to get landed about 150%. But no one's talking about 190-200% any longer. We're just not going to operate the prison system in the foreseeable future at that level. This prison is currently at about 2,800 inmates. We've been descending because of realignment, the change in the penal code. We're headed towards a goal of 2,400 inmates. The staffing is currently about 1,260 staff. It will remain at about that level. That includes medical, custody, administrative, maintenance folks. So you currently have a job base of about 1,260 inmates. Our infill project would add about 375. We have on-site wastewater treatment. We are lucky to get water from Amador Water Agency. We have a good agreement on that. We're going to talk about wastewater because we do have some issues with that. And this will become, if this project is approved, the foundation for the infill. It will be operated by Mule Creek. We have Brian Holmes here, one of our associate wardens from Mule Creek, so he can talk about maybe how that's going to work. But it's really just, you know, it's an adjacency to the current prison. It wouldn't be connected, though. So what do we have in the lay of the land when it comes to Mule Creek? We have the current prison up there on the hill. We have our own sewer plant back here. We have our own range back here. We don't use this range down here. We have a big affluent storage reservoir. We have an enormous piece of property. Not sure how we ever bought this much property. We have Preston, which, of course, is closed and doesn't have any particular future use under corrections planning. We have Cal Fire's Fire Academy. We have a little reservoir right here, which used to be an irrigation reservoir, water we used to divert out of Sutter Creek, but we don't anymore, which is now shared by ourselves and ARSA. For our wastewater effluent that goes down to the city of Ione's treatment plant. So we already have a connection from here down to the city. It's a rolling kind of terrain site with a lot of oak woodland on it, a couple of creeks going across it. It doesn't have too many neighbors right up against it except for the city of Ione down at the south.
That blue outline, Bob, where the proposed location is there?
That's where we'll see that in this drawing.
And does that encompass any of the current spray field area?
Yes.
And what portion? Can you highlight that on there?
All 100% of it. Yeah, we will lose directly as a result of the project when we're done with construction and pull back the margins a little bit, about 70 to 80 acres of current spray fields, and some will become kind of cut off, so we might lose as much as 100. We are anticipating having to go down to the city of Ione to join in with our spray field project they're doing. I'm going to talk about that in some detail. Project's fairly large. It's if you can picture office buildings, we have a couple downtown Sacramento that are about 500,000 square feet. This is about 630,000 gross square feet in terms of buildings, prison housing units, towers, things like that. So it's a pretty good size project. It's fairly low level in terms of the housing units are two stories, about 30 feet. Our towers are about 35 feet. Our lighting structures are about 35 feet. Of course, it's 24 hours a day. Visitation would continue to come through Mule Creek. We wouldn't have, we're going to talk about entrances. We wouldn't have a new entrance. Our proposal for this site is 1,584 beds. In the EIR, we do look at the 792 also, but our proposal for this site is a larger facility. We think this is a good place for doubling one of these. You wouldn't ever do a triple because it's like a whole new prison. Of course, security is enormous. As if you go through our plans, the security is exactly the same as a high-security prison. There's no difference in the security system, just the inmate. Just because we've had so many questions about this, and I shouldn't smile when I say this, we've had so many questions about why can't this become a Mule Creek? So what happened at Mule Creek was we actually hardened some of the cells way back in the 90s, and there was some community concern of going from a level 3 to a level 4, even though outwardly it's a very similar prison. I'm going to give you a little architectural lesson here. What Brian operates right now is... What Brian has to look out for right now is a celled two-story housing unit. So all the four housing units at Mule Creek are what we call a 270-degree unit, which is basically in the control booth you can see 270 degrees across two tiers of single cells. You can put two inmates, if they get along, in that space. This is really good for control. At nighttime, inmates are all locked down, no more than two to a cell. You can control these doors from a central point. You have vision over this from a control station that's armed. It's a very good level of control. You have this lower floor level, and then you have a higher tier above that. This is meant for inmates that don't get along too well or could cause trouble for staff or other inmates. So we have a lot of ability to isolate inmates, especially if we lock it all down or during the day or especially at night. Level 2 inmates are in dormitories, which don't think of college. Just think of that we've got about 6 beds to a room. The wall is gone. There should be a wall right here. These are also two-tier. They have a little less internal security. We don't have gun coverage inside, except if we bring the weapons into the facility. But it is still a very secure housing unit. We can lock the outside of the building. The individual dorm rooms can be secured. But I really, we wanted to communicate to the folks, you can't make this into this. We could never have level 3, level 4 inmates in a dormitory. It's just not enough isolation and control throughout the day. So what we're building is this lower security, and we don't see it ever changing. It's going to stay at this lower security. It's a little more cost-effective for us to operate because you get a little more inmates per square foot, fewer officers per inmate. So this is why it's not going to turn into what Mule Creek is today, the physical space.
Bob, the other concern I've heard in past presentations by you has been bed count and how bed counts is calculated. So with a dorm cell with
you can see
beds,
two. If you counted the two in the cell, that would be 200% of design. You can see in this drawing that we've actually got eight beds in there. That's about 150%. So you could double that up. But we're doing NEIR for only 1,584 beds. So if we start bringing, if Brian Holmes starts dragging more beds in there, we have to go back and look at our both our legislation, which said you should stay at 1,584, and we would be going outside the dimensions of our EIR.
So 1,584 beds is not 1,584 cells?
No. It's these rooms with 6 to 8 bunks in them.
Look, one of the concerns was that bunk beds are, we think they're two beds, but I guess CDCR.
Oh, no, we call that a bed's a bed. We call that two beds.
Okay, so because before the argument was that, from Mule Creek, was that bunk beds was still, and that's the answer I got before, it's still one bed.
Oh, I'm not going to go into history here.
Well, and the other thing is, you know.
I wasn't there. I don't know the conversation. This is always hard to explain the way we.
Just for ratification now, though, that's a bunk bed is considered two beds.
We count the bed. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. So when you look at that cell, but what's important here is we're not looking at this being overcrowded. We're looking at it operating up to 1,584 inmates, daily population, with the proper security. We are not looking at suddenly it going to 3,000 or 2,000, and that's both reflected in the current overcrowding court orders. We'd really be in violation of the court orders if we did that. And this is the way everything is sized. The staffing, the educational space, the mental health space, the clinical space is sized, physically, for this many inmates.
I respect your assurance, and you're not the decision maker that decided to take Mule Creek up to 3,400 beds at one point, but I mean, Mule Creek is still at 2,844,
right.
And they're projected to go down to 2,400, so they're still over where they should be. So I guess my point is the department can do anything the department wants to do depending on need.
Well, that's my concern when he said, you know, have to go back to the EIR, and it's, you know, stated in there not to exceed that. Well, how do you correct that? You just go back and redo the EIR and you do what you want. So that's not really a good assurance in my opinion.
So I would hope that they would adhere to the specs that you're giving us today, but I think we've seen in the past from history with Mule Creek that the department will do what they need to do.
I'm not going to argue about that. It's a tough job when the bus shows up and you've got inmates that have to come off of it. But with the court orders that are now going back to the Supreme Court, you know, we're going to be operating into the future a lot differently than we did in the past. And when we debt this, you were just talking about borrowing money to build something. We're going to borrow $800 million, and they're not going to give us another $100 million to start changing it. And the very reason we have the overcrowding order is that you have not only the bed space, but the vocational, educational, kitchen, all the other things that go with having a prison you can live in and meet court orders. So every time we tilt up the inmate population, all that, those other formulas go out of whack. So,
well, I guess the real question is how can we make sure that these assurances can be made and be binding legally? I know in the past the county has sued the state for this and basically got kicked out basically on a technicality from my memory, if my memory serves me right. But if there's some way that we can get assurances.
The first assurance I would offer is that when our secretary or our one of our two undersecretaries, the chiefs for the department, decide this project, they're going to sign their name to something that 1,584 beds at Mule Creek State Prison. So that is going to be in writing, recorded, available for public inspection. That's going to be our statement about what we're approving. Just when you approve a subdivision that's so many lots and so many people, that's what you approved. And I think the future is different in terms of I've already brought the prison system down by 30,000 inmates.
Well, give us some binding language, and we might feel better about it.
Okay, well, maybe we can keep on coming.
Something to think about. I mean, you know, we had an agreement before. We can have one now.
Yeah, sensitive to it. Just hard to. It's still folks committing and writing to what they're going to do into the future.
Yeah.
So what's it going to look like if we were to approve the site? This is the 1,500-bed model, sort of two of those six housing units. It's up on that hillside. It's quite a ways from the highway. It's almost three-quarters of a mile, actually just slightly over three-quarters of a mile up there. We use up kind of a spray field and a half, so we do have the spray field issue. I'm going to talk about this a little more as we get on. This is a spot you can see, but you can't get to with a big truck. I can get up there with my pickup truck, but there are no really good roads, construction roads up to the site. Eventually, we'll go back to using the current gate. We only have one gate at a prison, even if we have 10 prisons behind that gate. But we are going to have to find a way to get construction vehicles up to the site for about 2 years, about 24 months, 26 months. So I'm going to show you how we're proposing to use an existing access we have in State Route 104 right away for a temporary road. Don't encroach on CAL FIRE. CAL FIRE's operation stays the same. They will remain able to use the hillsides for their training and their heavy equipment use, things like that. So we're in pretty good shape with them. We will change the internal circulation a little tiny bit. We'll increase and develop a road that comes up and around and gets into this. We have to replace or add to a bridge. We have a single lane bridge currently, so over Mule Creek, so we have to add a bridge. But it's up on the hillside. It will be quite a bit of grading to get it flat. Prisons are only sort of 1% in each axis because we like to have sight lines. So you don't do two-tier, three-tier prisons like you would a subdivision. Preston Reservoir is unaffected. Our big reservoir is unaffected. And at this point, of course, Preston is heading towards being surpluses. As I said, you know, it's about 60 acres when we get done with parking and the outer perimeter, about 100 acres of disturbance while we're building it. We're going to have to, we're proposing to put in a temporary road off of by Castle Oaks. At the request of two of the supervisors that serve on the AWA, or the Transportation Agency, we have specifically are going to put in the contract that they have to keep off my favorite road, which is Tony. And the little hill, the little connecting road between 126 and 16. We're going to monitor how they use all the roads in the area. I have a monthly reporting on that. We are going to try to restrict them from using Michigan Bar Ione Road because it's sort of a de facto truck route, but it sort of isn't. So we're going to try it. We're going to push them to use 124 and 104, you know, as access as an 88 to the site. It is what it is. It's a hard place to get to, with even though you have a lot of semis already going through town.
So I think that one should say I.O. Michigan Bar, Tonzi, T-O-N-Z-I.
No, where it is. I was looking this morning, and I still couldn't find the street name. And then, of course, a significant issue for us is that we do need to come down and join the City of Ione's treatment plant in terms of adding spray fields. We found property. We'll show it to you. And we think this will be probably a pretty positive for ARSA and the City of Ione.
Also, if you could go back to that, I think that was the bottom. It should be Green Rock Ranches, shouldn't it?
Done last night, late. We currently, of course, use all of our property for spray fields, a significant portion of it. A lot of folks during our initial meeting with you expressed concerns about what happens to the groundwater and things like that. We're going to work as a result of having this project and having a little additional funding to get all of our effluent off-site, probably to Green Rock Ranch property or other adjacent properties with willing acceptors. We think it's a good opportunity to get out of the spray field business altogether, and it's kind of hard to maintain. Neighbors seem to think it's not so neat. So we're trying to get – we need about 200 acres to do that, but we think we can find it in the next month or so working with others. So we are – we have found already Green Rock Ranch has a perfectly usable fallow dry farm field not too far from the city's sewer plant. City's putting in their spray fields right here. So we're going to be working to make that as our primary replacement spray field with all the environmental controls that you have, runoff controls and monitoring wells and things like that. We would contract with the city to do that. We would pay the city to make the physical improvements to it. We wouldn't make the improvements ourselves. At least that's the proposal. We're going to look at other areas down here that have been, some have been pre-approved by the Water Board for spray fields. And we think we're going to probably help ARSA with putting in some of the infrastructure that they can potentially benefit from should they want to come down and do spray fields. So it might do some of the headworks that others can benefit by. We, of course, would only do that if the City of Ione agrees to make the physical improvements, and then we are about to start paying for it anyway. So in terms of rates, we would be paying beginning in 2014 on our rate structure. But the little reservoir doesn't change. This still has, where the heck it is, has adequate capacity for what we're doing. If it doesn't, we'll add another pipe system around that.
You
introduced me to Amateur Water Agency when I was here last, and I spent a lot of time with Gene. We have all the water we need for this project already in a permit, and he's not trying to get that back. He's fine so long as we stay within that current permit. He would really like the use authority's water supply line, 10-inch line, and we're working really hard on the paperwork to see if we can figure out how to do that. We actually would be convenient for him to take over the maintenance of that since we don't have a maintenance budget for it. It goes right to the treatment plant, so it's very beneficial for him. So I think we'll pull it off, but I apologize for not getting quite there yet on that. But we've been meeting, having the attorneys, lengthy documents, I think we're going to get there, and I appreciate you guys bringing that up because people in Sacramento didn't even know about that issue. So you were a good source for that.
Roger, well, you had a question?
Yeah, I did. Bob, does the effluent, once it leaves the Mule Creek property, the CDCR's property, does it leave in a condition that allows it to immediately then be sprayed to the fields, or it doesn't need additional treatment by the city?
We already chlorinate, disinfect the water, but we're actually going to add, we're doing a little improvement project at our sewer plant to meet some water board issues, and we're actually going to improve the chlorination a little better. We have to send it down to the tertiary plant. It has to be disinfected. So everything currently coming down through that system to the tertiary plant at the golf course has to be disinfected. So, yes, everything coming off our property is going to meet water board disinfection standards. And if it's not already, we're going to...
Is that the term I've heard in the past on all these issues is unrestricted use, Title 22 unrestricted use?
The water we're going to hopefully put on the field and actually raise some arable crop, finally, alfalfa, exactly falls in that category.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we have a separate, by coincidence, much delayed project to improve our sewer plant, just because it's pretty old. And so that's a component of that project to make sure it does have unrestricted ability to go on to spray fields. So we've talked a lot about construction on this and schedule because we still have our invitation out to you to potentially participate in our contractor outreach. Ione's getting a little more interested. I just want to show you where things go. The actual hard dollar construction budget for this, all the concrete and steel and cabinetry and towers and windows and things like that is about $370 million. The total project is $533 million. That's inspection and design. The contractor, the design-build contractor that would get be awarded when we get down to the three and interview them, it's a contract about $450 million. So that includes design and their observation of the project. This schedule I did just for you because this is a window of opportunity to potentially have somebody from the county as well as the city be on our panel to remind folks that we are trying to get jobs for Amador County and suppliers and contractors to participate in the contractor's team. We're just finished going through the economic review of the five firms that showed up. It was a prequal situation. So we got five firms now. We're just putting out a request for qualifications, and we're going to go through that. We're going to do that in about a month. We'll, sometime in on schedule, I should know it, in August we'll have a short list of three firms, three design, build, big contractors, design firms that are going to do two things. They're all going to compete for both projects, the San Diego project if it gets approved and this one if it gets approved. And they need to write a proposal for both. So we're going to invite them to write a proposal. We're going to hand them 35% completed criteria documents to say what we want to build and what the specifications are. They all get the same budget. They all get the stipulated sum. It's not a bid. But that is when they'll be assembling their teams, and hopefully we can strongly encourage them to try to, get folks from Amador County, businesses from Amador County to participate in their team. Once they win the job, which happens sometime in October, get selected, during the course of the project, we also continue that pressure on them. We don't have a specific targeted goal because it would be illegal under state law, but we have been very successful in Stockton with this process. A little different economic situation in terms of businesses, but, I now know about gravel, know a lot about gravel in this county, know a lot about other smaller businesses. And we think if we keep the pressure up that we will get pretty good participation, especially veterans, disabled veterans, small business, as well as just all the different things that you need to for 2 years to build. So, we're still not quite there yet. City of Ione thinks they're going to have somebody. We actually invite them to be on the panel. They don't get to be a voting member, but they get part of the closed negotiations with the three that have been proposed. So we still, if you'd like to send us somebody, we're still looking for that candidate, but we need them by sometime in August to really participate all the way through.
Amador County has a local bidder preference. Is there any way the state could implement that within their contract so that local people might have an edge?
Not under the authority we're using for this one. It's a little different authority. So it'd be, but it's really just our business relationship with the contractor, and we've proven successful in Stockton and getting them to be really good about reaching out to the local community.
So I got questions from
you're talking here. Subcontractors, right?
Yes, yeah, lots of subs. Suppliers, labor pools,
right.
Little guys, big guys. I mean, you're just not full of big storehouses of wholesale sheetrock in Amador County, but you do have a lot of stuff. Like I said, I know where all the gravel comes from now around here. And
Supervisor Plaza and Supervisor Novelli.
Well, I just wanted to mention to my fellow board members that I've had this discussion with Mr. Schleppi a number of times in the past, scheduling this meeting and looking to schedule a workshop environment that invites local bidders to this, and I'd like to put myself forward as a participant in this. I don't know what you call it.
Plus, he has my home phone
team
number already.
I'd like the board to consider.
That invitation to you was genuine. I know you think it's maybe, what are you going to get out of it? I don't know until we get down to, having the three and then having the one that gets picked for this job. But we have been just enormously successful in Stockton. Now, a little different labor pool, in a 30-mile circumference around that. But the contractors get it. And this design build, there's a little more freedom to not necessarily use the cheapest thing. You can kind of negotiate your contract, so. So anyway, so we hope you take us up on that. We're still looking for
board chair. The board chair will decide on that.
Okay. There's no free lunches though on it, so.
Bob, How about, you mentioned the contractors, but what about the material? Now, you mentioned gravel, but what about the materials? Can you get materials, whether it be gravel or something else, if we have it in this county?
I think just gravel is about distance. Every truck carries the same amount. So gravel is about distance. So yeah, I think you're pretty competitive for gravel, given what you've got actually just down in Ione and kind of in that lower foothill zone. But you know, you don't have a warehouse full of wholesale drywall, things like that. So
not yet, but we might.
Well, you might. Never know. But we've been so successful in Stockton, we would like to try and achieve this again. Both my bosses would like to do that. We don't have a specific goal, but it's just a different circumstance in Emory County. You're just a.
I think I'd just like to keep that door open because. You know, you say we don't have a warehouse full of sheetrock, but you don't know what we have when we don't have.
We certainly got a lot of lumber.
I think you said that it's all about relationships, and I think that's exactly right. And that could be a potential problem, though, because sometimes, and I've seen this in the past, where the state employs their main contractor, and if he's got a relationship with people he's used on other jobs, they're the preferred one.
Well, I won't deny that, but, you know, Supervisor Plaza and I have been talking about just that issue, that sooner we can get a list of vendors, what they do, their contracts. We're going to do a horrible thing and give out the names of the project directors of the three so they can their phones can be piled up with voicemails from people that are local. They're going to know we're trying to hire locally to the degree they can and get the job done. They've got to be able to trust the contractor. He's got to have insurance and bondable and all that kind of stuff. But still, we were successful in Stockton, way beyond our expectations. We had a monthly check-in, you know, with an elected official panel, so they wasn't pretty daylighted in what we were doing. Took us seriously, and because it's design-build, it isn't a low bid. It's a little different beast in terms of who you get. They do have to bid a few trades under state law, but they get to choose which one they're bidding. So anyway, I don't want to. Let that fall off because we did invite you. I know you're reluctant, and I know you don't want to be associated if it all goes bad, but we genuinely were hoping for someone to.
Well, in reality, I mean, you have a couple of the building centers here in the county, and there's always those little things that they're going to need to run down. They don't want to have to run down.
Yeah, the hardware stores are still going to do well, and the equipment rental guys are going to do well.
Yeah. And I think it's important that, you know, they use them.
You're used to doing EIRs, so I'm going to do something the client never, the proponent never does. I'm actually going to tell you what's in our EIR. Number one, of course, we have this huge volume of all these volumes that Chris has wore himself out. Chris Monk here from Ascend Environmental. Our environmental, we have like five chapters like this big. We've been everywhere in the state, and of course, some sites like this one, we do have the smaller option. But the proposal is for the 1,500 bed. It's out on the street for public review. The public hearing is down in Ione on the 29th. We got two of them, three and six, or three and five. I'm going to talk about another little thing we got planned. Air quality, every big construction job causes a lot of dust. Your standard is so low that you have to admit that we have a significant unavoidable adverse effect. We will be watering the living daylights out of the site just because we're doing a lot of grading, and our contractors are always under the watchful eye of the local air quality control district as well as the state. So we think there won't be a lot of dust, even though we have to find for significance. Biological, there's a lot of birds and bees up there. We have to cut down a lot of trees. We have some actually tiny little wetlands up there, jurisdictional wetlands, that get pretty affected by the fact we disc it four times a year. But we're going through quite a bit of permitting for the site, Corps of Engineers for a wetlands permit, fishing game for stream alteration, and as well as the regional board for both sewer plant and changing watersheds. We think we can address this. We have the funds to address it. We have lots of places to plant more oak trees when we're done, and lots of inmates to take care of them. But this is a significant permit issue with the project. It's a long lead time issue.
Don't spend a lot of money on it
right now. Hydrology, of course, you have to make sure dirt doesn't run off, and we have strong rules about that in our contracts. What's really important for all of you is that our current wastewater treatment plant is just a little bit smaller in terms of capacity than it needs to be for the peaks, daily peaks, and what the two fill these together would have for capacity. So we're going to, you know, under a separate project, probably push the sewer plant a little bigger, make some improvements to chlorination, things like that. Go get a new permit from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Address our cease and desist order, which is partially the spray fields. And the same thing Ione had with a little bit of minerals getting into the groundwater. So we're going to clean up the sewer plant, get it all fixed up. We're going to propose to come off-site to that spray field as well as thawing another 100 acres working through the city of Ione. But that's a pretty significant element of the project.
Bob, excuse me, how do you plan on doing that? You can't close the prison down, so how do you plan on...
The current plant actually works pretty well. It just doesn't... if we have 2 years, 2.5 years, to have it able to activate the other 1,500 beds. So the current sewer plant is fine, except for a few exceedances of here and there. But its capacity to treat sewage is fine.
With the two systems going, that you're going to have to enlarge your treatment plant.
Yeah.
So how do you plan on doing that when you have your system? One system will be going 24/7. You're not going to shut it down. The prison, Mule Creek State Prison.
We have enough redundancy to do that, to be able to do this work on the plant and still process sewage currently. So, but our big issue, though, is we certainly need it all done and ready to go in 2016 when we activate the new prison. So suddenly you're going to have 1,500 more inmates using the system. So we do need to have all these long-term improvements made as well as the spray fields ready to go. If we get the spray fields going sooner, we'll send effluent down sooner.
And probably just
the process of getting that 1,500 new inmates there, is that going to be a process where it'll take 6 months, 3 months?
Yeah, probably. We'll be bringing them from different parts of the state. You kind of activate a housing unit at a time so you don't suddenly show up with a suite of buses. You want to kind of activate yards as you move around the facility, so yeah, it'll be kind of slow. Utilities, we're in a good situation for water. We have a great permit for water. We do need to address the off-site spray fields, and we're working very closely with the City of Ione and Green Rock and others on that issue. Buttons here. Transportation. We show a net effect in cumulative on the intersection at 88 and Jackson Valley Road. So at this point, we're going to end up contributing an incremental cost to what it would cost to make that a full signalized intersection. We'll probably be bringing it to the transportation agency for that payment. We'll pay our regional fair share payment, which is about $50,000 or $60,000. I'm not sure if we've calculated it yet. That just is how you want to spend it. We don't make any improvements in downtown Ione. There's nothing much you can do with downtown Ione. There will be a lot of traffic going through it. But by far, and we will have a construction management traffic plan that will be closely monitored by us. It's probably copying the transportation agency on a monthly basis. But by far, one of the more interesting situations is we don't have a good way to bring construction equipment onto the site. Working with the agency, we've looked at four different ways to get onto the property. We can go through our current gate, and that just kind of causes Brian a big headache in security. Not big enough to have a lot of construction equipment coming through it. I believe one of the members, supervisors on the agency, asked if we could come off 124 directly, and Waterman Road's about as wide as this podium, and it'd be hard to bring anything more than a few pickup trucks, plus there's some pretty nice homes on that road. So we don't see using Waterman. We looked at it really hard, walked it, chased snakes all around there, and it's just hard to use Waterman. And plus, either from the Ione perspective, it brings a lot of traffic right to residential areas, or if you come off of 124 directly, it's a lot of construction equipment to be grading and coming down the road. We looked at going into the Cal Fire entrance. Cal Fire does have an entrance for big trucks, but it's kind of on a turn, on a slope, so it's not a good place to have a lot of construction equipment slowly making a turn in there, and we think Cal Fire would never talk to us again. So we've been working on putting a temporary road. We currently have a road, a little unimproved gravel road that goes up between us and Cal Fire, comes out at the site. We're proposing to put a little extension down to our opening right opposite Castle Oaks. We have a right-of-way opening. This is Now, I know you want everything in writing, and I appreciate that. This is temporary. We have no intention of having a second permanent entrance to the prison. None. Zip. Zero. We don't like more than one entrance. We don't have an interest, but we think this is our only feasible way to really bring construction equipment and onto the site. We're going to go to the trouble of actually trying to save this tree right here. There's a really nice tree that kind of creates a little visual barrier. So we're going to try to engineer this real closely with Caltrans as well as a transportation agency. We proposed initially a stoplight here, and I got voted down by everybody in the county so far that doesn't like stoplights. So we're proposing to use manual flaggers at the peak periods so that you don't get stuck forever trying to take a left turn.
Can you go back one slide, please? There's no way to move that further towards Ione. That's going to rub people the wrong way because they're going to assume that that's going to be the entrance right across from Cal.
I do, and it's probably my halftime payment is to convince people it will not become a permanent entrance. The trouble is when you move a little bit this way, there's a great big wetland right there, so it kind of works out. And Caltrans likes you to stick to their legal right-of-way that they've provided where our gate is. We are going to have to make it a little wider for the turning radiuses. At this point, we're trying to convince the folks in Castle Oaks that a manual flagger will be more sensitive than a stoplight that only changes every 2.5 minutes. Because some mornings you'll have a lot of traffic, some mornings you might not. And I think that especially the left-turn folks are going to get challenged by this. But we're having a meeting with them next week, so we'll kind of see how that goes.
If it has to be there, I think it's very important to have signage that really relates to people. That's going to be a temporary entrance.
Yeah. Well, we just went through this oddly in San Diego. We had a developer that wanted us to put in a second road to our prison, and we kind of went through quite an analysis. And it was my own experience that I realized that I've worked on 22 prisons since 1986, and all of them have one entrance. We don't have it in writing, but it's simply our practice. We don't like to have there to be two ways to get away, two ways to cause trouble. So we have no intention of keeping this road.
I might want to say temporary entrance. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Really, really,
believe
really,
us?
Really. I love you guys. So this is what it looks like. We're hoping to have a meeting with the Castle Oaks folks here shortly. Visual, everybody was concerned about visual because obviously Mill Creek's a pretty visual prison. Kind of stands out. But in this case, let's see here. In this case, we're so far up the hill and the train kind of raises up and we have a lot of trees that you'll be hard-pressed to see anything but the very top of a tower on right here and maybe a roof line in the wintertime when there's no leaves in the trees. But we have quite a bit of train bumps and elevations. We have a lot of trees right here. And it's a darn hard thing to see from the highway. And if you're looking that way, then you're not driving safely because you have to look at a complete right angle while you're driving down 104. We're trying to keep this big tree and all these trees. If we cut back any of our landscaping, we're going to replace it with large. But once again, it's just a darn hard place to see. Now, at nighttime, you'll see a little bit of lighting at the tops, the very top of the light standard. But it's going to be almost 3/4 of a mile away. So we think compared to Mill Creek, this will be pretty much out of sight from a community standpoint visually. As I said before, we have a policy with the Department of Finance that when we build a new bed, we give a community a combined $800 one time for that. I know all of you as folks who try to run a county say that's too little, but it's currently our policy, and this Department of Finance has been kind of stuck on that for a long time. It gets split under the penal code between the superintendent schools, just gets half of it, and then you and the City of Ione get to decide how to spend the other half of it. It has to be generally for public improvements, capital improvements, because it's bond-funded money, so we kind of want to see what you're doing with it. It can't be for county fairs and things like that. But that would be coming to you at the beginning of construction, so as early as 2014, we'd be sitting down talking about these funds.
As far as that temporary entrance, going back to that, does it state right in the DEIR that is a temporary entrance and no intention to use that?
Yep. Yes, it does, and we will emphasize that continually. We all have our own fire department. Of course, we have our own police. Our schedule is we're rolling along. We're out for public review. We do the final EIR. We're trying to approve this project in the middle of fall, take it to our secretary or our executive management team. We've been approving, selecting and approving both sites, the one down in San Diego and here, as well as looking at the alternatives, Folsom and Vacaville. Really like to start construction in the spring of 2014 because we're supposed to activate it in 2016. So we're trying real hard to get this project ready to go, all of our permits, wastewater treatment plant, things like that. It's kind of small. I've got copies of this for you. This is I can blame all of this on you too. Not a public hearing. It's not a formal public hearing with a court recorder, but we're going to go to the golf course first, and Dominic's going to help us use the cafe there, and then we're the next week going to go over to the Evelyn whatchamacallit Center and do the same meeting over again. This is just a rare chance to talk to the lead agency about what's in the EIR. We're not taking any comments because we don't have a court recorder. That hearing will be at the end of the month, 29th of July. So we're, a lot of you suggested this. A lot of folks suggested this. You, the city, others. So we're going to go do it. It's hard to get notice out in these kind of situations. So we're putting it in the paper and on websites and things like that. If you can do it on your website, that'd be cool.
Bob, if people have at either of those briefings, if people have written comments, can they submit
them? Oh yeah, very very much so. The period's open, so you can come in with a letter. You could scribble something down and leave it with us. But we're not going to be in that, you know, formal take testimony, have a court recorder kind of thing. We want this to be a little more informal, where people, institution, myself, Chris, can answer questions. And, you know, EIRs are a little ponderous, so it's kind of nice that we thought we'd do this. We want to talk to them about the entrance. So, anyway, that's what we're doing. And
Bob, one other question, if you don't mind. Getting back to that construction road. So when construction is finished, totally built and everything, you're going to come and
pull it right back to the edge of pavement.
So what happens if 1 year, 5 years down the road, you need to build something at this new facility? You're going to reopen that road?
Number one, we can't do anything there without Caltrans and Stockton's approval. So we need their approval to put it in, we need their approval to take it out, and we need their approval to put it back in again. I don't see us having a new entrance to the prison. We're going to actually build a whole new road internal down to Brian's Gate.
I'm not saying a new entrance, but if you need that road to facilitate your new prison later on down the road to do some new construction, are you going to try to...
The EIR will not have addressed a permanent entrance, so we'd have to come back with an amendment to that. But just because we've had this focus down in San Diego where somebody really thought we should have a second road, we've all come to realize that it's just an assumption of running a prison, you have one entrance. And this one is a good example. I mean, we're even going to put in that extra bridge up on the creek just so we have good solid circulation back down through their current gate. Visitor parking is going to be over at the main prison. So we don't have, and then we don't want to kind of get in Cal Fire's world, so we don't like the idea also of sharing an entrance with them.
That other bridge you're talking about, that'll support a large construction truck type vehicle.
Yeah, and with delivery trucks, you know, things like that. So, yeah.
I'm sure you thought of it, but with respect to utilities, you've probably talked with PG&E. There's adequate natural gas, adequate power.
Right, we're pretty good for gas. We're actually had a separate proposal to bring in. We like to have a transmission quality connection to the grid. We'd like to be directly into the grid. We save a lot of money doing that. So we're working with PG&E to make that both for both facilities, existing facilities, as well as this one. So, yeah, and all of our prisons where we can do it, we like to take a drop right off of the, you know, the big 250 kVs. We get a much better rate, and we get cleaner, you know, more reliable power. So, yeah.
Where that would come from?
It's right behind us. There's a power line going right just east of us. And
transmission line.
Yeah, it has to be upgraded a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I know when they shut the sawmill down and then later on they did some development up there, then there wasn't enough power available. Yeah. And you think, how could that happen? Well, they took and utilized it somewhere else.
Yeah. So. Well, at Stockton, we had a terrible time in Stockton. We just couldn't get enough power. And we're actually bringing in a huge line at some distance just because we, once again, are pretty uniform about this, wanting to have transmission quality power right to the prison. I really do like coming up here. It's a lot of fun. I appreciate Chris helping help put this together, and we're, I think you know how to get a hold of me and get a hold of us. We're glad to come up for any other group that might want to hear from us. We're just trying to be informative. People like prisons or don't like them. That's okay with us. We're just
You made it to the business council.
I did.
You had a little trouble getting to the Chamber of Commerce on.
I haven't. It seems like the rare day I take off is the only day in the month that I'm going to call them again. So I'll try to get to them. So, but I am available. She knows how to get a hold of me as well as I think most of you do, and Gordon knows how to do it. So we're pleased to do that. We have. Just want to tell people what we're doing.
Or board question. Any public comment at this time? None. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate the quick getting us on the calendar. Right.
Thank you. You might want to stay around for our next one. I don't know if it's of interest to you or not. Okay. Well, in that case, can we get the lights up, Jennifer? We're going to take about a 10-minute break.
That's your chance to gear up.
Yep. Ooh.